everyone, welcome to Makers Today, a special series here on Fish Fry where we highlight the movers and shakers in the maker space. My guest today is the man, the myth, the legend, the one and only Max Maxfield. In addition to being an all-around awesome person and an outstanding editor here at EE Journal, Max has made some seriously cool projects over the years, and he's here to tell us all about them. So, without further ado, let's welcome Max to Makers Today. Hi, Max. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so for my audience who may not know you, tell me a little bit about your history. How did you get started in electronic engineering?
When I was a young man, I was interested in building things with Legos and Meccano, like a mechanical DIY erector set type things. But I was also into artistic pursuits. And when I graduated from high school, I wasn't sure whether to go to art college or engineering school. And my mother said to me, you have to be a really, really, really good artist to earn serious money, but you can be an average engineer and still get paid all right and do the art stuff in your spare time. And so I ended up going to university to study engineering, which I think was the best thing that I ever did. And my mother thinks it's the best thing she ever told me what to do.
I love that. Now, I am not sure I can even pick a favorite project you have created. A couple of my favorites are Steve and Max's Awesome Displays, a project you created with Steve Manley, your cunning chronograph, or the caveman diorama that you're building in an old television, or maybe the 12 by 12 array of ping pong balls that have tricolor LEDs inside. I really am not sure I could pick a favorite. So, Max, how do you come up with the ideas to create these projects? And can you walk me through your creation process a bit?
Sure. Every project is different. For example, I was down at an old electronics shop in Huntsville several years ago, and I noticed a bag of defunct vacuum tubes on the floor, all sorts of different shapes and sizes. And I said to the guy behind the counter, what are you going to do with those? He said, oh, we're going to throw them in the trash. And they were just gleaming, just looking interesting. And I said, well, give them to me and I'll get rid of them. And I didn't know what I was going to do with them at the time. So I just took them home and put them in the garage. And then a little later, I ran across a small suitcase that looked antique. It was really just something that you stick in a front room to, you know, in the corner to make it look interesting and arty-farty. And I was looking at this case, and I think I'd just seen one of those Harry Potter curious creature type things where the guy was carrying a case around. And I thought, oh, those vacuum tubes would look really nice in that little case. And so I took the vacuum tubes, and as I say, they were all broken or non-functional, chopped the pins off them and mounted them in the case, put tricolored LEDs underneath them, an Arduino and a microphone. And that's one of the things that really was a very simple project, but when anyone comes in the office, they immediately go, oh, is that responding to me talking? And it's like, well, it responds to sound, so yes. And then I get them to put the phone next to it and play some music. It's the sort of thing that if you were to go back 30 or 40 years, people would be blown away by it. Now it's just something that with an Arduino, you can throw together very quickly. With the ping pong ball array, I think I just saw something on YouTube where some guy had created a clock using a matrix of ping pong balls. And I thought, I'd like one of those. So I looked on Amazon and found that you could buy 144 ping pong balls for a mere $11. So I created an array. Because there are 144, I created a 12 by 12 array. A very pragmatic sort of arrangement. And once I got the array of ping pong balls, I then started experimenting. And actually, it proved to be a test bed for all sorts of projects. For instance, I picked myself one of those 9 degrees of freedom MEM sensors from Adafruit. It's one with a three-axis accelerometer, a three-axis gyroscope, and a three-axis magnetometer. It's also got a 32-bit ARM Cortex core in it that does all the sensor fusion for you, because processing sensor data like that can make your brains leak out of your ears. And Adafruit also provides some really simple sketches, so you can access the data very quickly. So I had the sensor and I was thinking, what shall I do with this? And so I put it into the ping pong ball array. And you know, when you're younger, your parents buy you one of these marble runs where you've got a box with a marble maze on top and two knobs, and you try to turn the knobs to guide the marble around, and it drops through the holes if you're not careful. And so I did that with the ping pong ball array. I laid it on its side, and I detect the orientation, the tilt of it, using the sensor, and use that to guide a lit ping pong ball rolling around the array, as it were. Another one I did recently was a Conway's Game of Life implementation, which you'd think on a 12 by 12 array would be pretty limiting. But when you make the universe wrapped around, curved, so if something goes off the right-hand side, it comes back on the left, and if it goes off the top, it comes back on the bottom. The effect is pretty startling, especially when you start using multiple colors for intermediate states and everything. I don't know if that answered your question.
I think so. Okay, so Max, of all the things you have designed over the years, what has been your favorite experience?
Ooh, that really is a tricky one. Each one has got its own attractions for me. Well, first of all, I love the steampunk aesthetic. There are a lot of technologies that were invented back in the 1950s that you'd have thought would have faded away by now, but they seem to be coming back. And one of them was a display technology that involved, back in the mid-50s, I can't remember which company did it, but they had 10 sheets, very thin sheets of glass, and into each sheet they'd etched a number. These things were about 4 inches tall by 2 inches wide. And then they'd lit the sheet underneath using a little incandescent bulb about the size of a grain of rice. But if you light the sheet, it acts like a light pipe, and the digit that's engraved into the sheet lights up very brilliantly. It can be seen from a long way away. And some guy called Connor started making these just using thin sheets of acetate and tri-coloured NeoPixels from Adafruit. Very tasty displays, full colour and everything. And I was watching that film with George Clooney where he'd got some sort of countdown timer with 12 digits. And he was counting down to the end of the world, which was a bit discouraging. But I thought I could do that, something like that with these displays. And I decided to make myself a countdown timer that counts the years, months, days, hours, minutes, seconds to my 100th birthday. And then the other part of that is not just to have the flashy displays, but to build a case that looks the part, looks a bit Victorian, brass panels in it and everything. So now I've got a countdown timer that's counting down to the celebrations. And what I was going to do is put in some sort of audio effects. So it's like sort of thing. If anything should happen to me that I can't be there, like if I'm water skiing on the Amazon River or something, I'm leaving it to my son with an off button so that he can turn the sounds off, but then it'll start up again about an hour later and keep on playing throughout the day at the most inopportune times, hopefully. So that was one. That was a fairly simple one. Another one I've got is, I call it my prognostication engine. The idea is going to predict the future. The main part is in a 1929 wooden radio cabinet, but there wasn't enough room for all the knobs and dials and switches I wanted. And I've got a friend called Carpenter Bob, who by some strange quirk of fate is a carpenter. So he built me a box that sits on top of it with the hand-carved rosettes and everything else that absolutely looks as though it's part of the main radio cabinet. And that's got 5 gigantic vacuum tubes on top, and they're lit with, I think, about 150 tricolored LEDs. The cabinet itself has got a lot of very large old analog meters. I discovered a company in California who refurbish old meters, because again, you'd think that analog meters were a thing of the past, but it turns out that for many things like nuclear power stations that were commissioned, say, 30 years ago, they were commissioned with a certain set of equipment. And if one of the meters stops working, you can't just run down to Radio Shop. Well, you obviously you can't now because they're no longer there. But you can't run down to an equivalent and pick up a new meter and come back and pop it in. The station wasn't certified with that equipment. So you'd have to recertify the whole station at the cost of tens of millions of dollars, or send that meter down to these people and they will refurbish it and send it back to you. And they very kindly, I have a graphic artist friend who created me new dial faces to match what I was trying to do. And this company very kindly refurbished them all for me. So now I've got all these analog meters. I've got some antique switches and knobs and dials and things. The trouble is I get sidetracked. I'd rather be doing it than finish it in a way. So I have these brass panels on the front, but I got sidetracked into how do I age brass? So I got lots of strips of brass and experimented with many different chemical formulations. Turns out that horse manure has a really good effect, but I tried horse manure, cow manure, various mixes of salt and vinegar. Turns out you can get a very interesting effect if you use wood shavings. So bury the brass plates in a box of wood shavings and then sprinkle the chemicals on the wood shavings. But as you can see, I do wander off into the weeds sometimes, I'm afraid.
I love that. It's interesting that wood shavings would have that kind of effect. So, Max, do you have any fun projects on the horizon?
Oh, I think the big one at the minute is those SMAD displays, Stephen Max's awesome display. And that sort of started off because we ran across a group in the, well, Steve's based in the UK, and obviously I was from there, but Steve and I met through the internet, as did a big bunch of techno weenies who like making things. There's a group called Smart Sockets in the UK, but one of them found on the internet a patent for an interesting display from Victorian times. And when you hear things like 7-segment display or 14-segment display or 16-segment display, you immediately think of LED-based displays. And I remember when those first came out in the 70s, and I was like, wow. You know, it's like almost we're like living in the 21st century. Look how flashy these things are. But it turns out that this patent was from 1898, so firmly in Victorian times, and it was for a 21-segment display. Each segment had got a small incandescent bulb, and all the segments were controlled by a very complicated electromechanical switch. So the switch rotated around and then lit the appropriate segments to make the characters that you wanted. But the whole layout, the outlines of the segments, has a Victorian feel to it. And so we decided to make a modern incarnation. Now, the old ones would have been pretty big, like maybe a foot tall, 9 inches across. We made ours, we 3D printed the shells for each one and made the circuit boards. And each circuit board, some of the longer segments have got two tricolored LEDs, and the shorter segments and dots have got one. So there's 35 LEDs in all. Steve and I are both making 10-character displays, which you can use to display the time, the date, text. We both like music and light effects, so they're going to have microphones and everything else. And I also write a column once a month for a magazine in the UK called Practical Electronics. I write a Cool Beans column for them. And I've been writing about different LED effects and different ways to control LEDs and different type of LEDs and things for months and months and months now. So I started writing about the Victorian display, but it struck me that it would be quite an expensive hobby for the typical reader to want to build one of these things. And the code is reasonably complicated. If you think about it, you could do things very simply. You could just say, okay, I want to turn certain segments on and other segments off, and that way I can build a character like a number or a letter. But then you're sort of limited to, well, you've got white text on black background or black text on a red background or whatever. We decided to do it more where you've got a background color and a foreground color and a mask. So for the character set, we've got a mask that says which segments to turn on or off. And the way we work it is that everything's going to start off with the background color. And then when the mask says this segment is on, it displays the foreground color. And then instead of having just static colors, the background color could be a rippling rainbow, could be dynamic, and the foreground color could be dynamic. So you either display whatever's on the background on that segment or the foreground. So like I say, the code for this is a bit complicated, especially when you're dealing with a 10-segment display and you've got all these different options for all the things you're doing. And that's why Steve and I came up with the concept of the SMAD display, which is a small circuit board, 70 millimeters square. We've actually got 29 segments and 45 LEDs. And you can use it to do anything. So you could just buy one little board and use that to do something interesting. What I've done is I've taken two of the boards and I've made them into, if you think of like a Wall-E-type robot, where it's got the little rectangular head with the two big eyes. I'm using two of these SMAD displays for the eyes and using that as the basis for the articles for the UK magazine. But we can still do the same effects like the foreground colour, the background colour, the masking effect and everything else. But it's a much smaller project that people can wrap their brains around. I built a couple of, well, actually I built two robot heads because Steve can't keep his hands off his 3D printer. So the original idea, as I said, was these would be 29 segment displays where I think 32 of the segments have two LEDs each. So it's like eight spokes radiating out from a central pinwheel and then eight bars around the edges. But then you've got all these little dots and things as well. The great thing about that is that on the long segments, if you've got two LEDs, you can do some very nice fading effects where you have the LEDs at different colours and transitioning from one colour to another. So you can get effects where the colour seems to explode from the centre and move out to the periphery. But Steve has his 3D printer and he couldn't stop himself from making a different type of shell with 45 holes. So each segment has got its own LED. And at first I was a bit disgruntled about that. Well, not disgruntled, but I thought, well, that's not going to look very good because we'll lose all these gradient effects. But in fact, it looks like a stained glass window effect. And it looks so good that I couldn't help myself from building two of those as well. So now I've got two robot heads, one with two 29-segment eyes and one with two 45-segment eyes, both with the same number of LEDs. But it's interesting to see how the effects vary just by the way you've partitioned the light and blocked the light. And so I'm working on effects now, making the robot eyes, trying to give them expressions. Yeah, sort of like if there's a sound, have the pupils move to that side to look at the sound. And you can use colour to express anger or happiness or whatever. And so that gives me a raft of things to talk about for future articles. In a way, that's a nice project because it's something you can wrap your brain around, just dally with when you've got a few minutes spare, where the larger projects take a lot more planning and a lot more effort. And once you're embroiled in one, you don't want to leave it to do something else. You want to keep on working on it because if you go away for a few weeks and you come back, it's like the classic old programmer's thing where you read some code and the programmer's put a comment in that says, when I wrote this bit, only God and myself knew how it worked, and now God only knows. And it's a bit like that with my software. If I'm not careful, I can't, because I'm not a natural coder. I'm a hardware design engineer by trade. And like most engineers, I've gone through learning assembly language, and back in the day, Fortran and Pascal and C and Python. But it's not what I'm the best at. So when I come back to look at my programs, I do try to comment things, and I've got my own coding standards for variable names and constant names, and that are based on experienced programmers' advice. But still in all, when I come back to look at code that I wrote a few weeks ago, I look at it and it's like Egyptian hieroglyphics. It takes me quite a long time to get back into it. So having a smaller project that I can, like I say, totally wrap my brain around, I find that quite relaxing at the minute because I've got so many things on at work. Once again, I'm sorry, I do tend to waffle, much like my mother. The real trick is to get us to stop talking.
Love it. All right, Max, it is time for your off the cuff question. So are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go. So we're all on some level of lockdown these days, not traveling as much, certainly. So Max, if you could have one meal right now, it doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, you need a passport to get there, or even if it's on the other side of your state, what would you have?
Actually, I really enjoy cooking, so there's nothing I would particularly send out for. But there are some dishes that I make that do take a lot of time and effort. So if I were to have the meal of my choice, if there's like a really special occasion, like if Jeff Bezos said, hey, we're going to have another flight next week, would you like to join us? And I would go, absolutely. My suitcase is already packed. I'm on my way. But first, I'm going to have a meal to celebrate. I'd do a seafood gumbo. Because a friend of mine many, many years ago, I think it was just after I came to the States, so it was 31 years ago, gave me his family recipe for seafood gumbo. And I love it. But like I say, it takes a huge amount of effort because first you have to make a roux. This recipe is the sort of thing that you use to serve a massive party. So it makes something like 10 gallons. And I don't know how to make it any smaller. You know, this is what I know. So making the roux takes forever, and the sheer amount of seafood that goes into it is horrendous, really. but, funnily enough, so it's totally sideways sort of story, really. I read an awful lot. I read predominantly science fiction books, but also science books or technology books, so long as they're interesting. Yeah, I hate boring books that start off, as we all know, and then 10 pages of equations. And I go, well, I didn't know that. Yeah, I like something with a bit of interest. And I think it was 1992. I woke up on a Saturday morning and I was going to go out to the secondhand bookstore. And while I was lying in bed, I thought to myself, it'd be so cool to go to a bookstore and see a book I'd written on the shelf. And I was taken with the idea. So rather than go out that day, I powered up my computer and started typing. And the first sentence of the book was, now sit up and pay attention because this bit's important. And then I sat back and I thought, what am I going to write about? And the only things I really knew about were either electronics or computers. And I decided to write the electronics book that I wished I'd had when I was a student. Because when I was a student, you had 50 books and none of them had the fact you were looking for in it. So I wanted to have one book that had all the facts I was looking for, but written in a sort of different way. So I spent the next 2 years, this was before the internet, of course. So I spent 2 years of evenings and weekends at the local library with the Encyclopedia Britannica just to check the facts. I got all the technical stuff in my head, but it was like knowing when Charles Boole was born and when he died and when he invented Boolean algebra and that sort of thing. And it was when I was actually flicking through the book looking for Boole that I went too far and I found Boogie. And then I started reading about, you know, the music form Boogie and Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and everything, and certainly got sidetracked again. That ended up being the title of the book, Bebop to the Boolean Boogie. And in the end, in the appendices, I thought, you know, I'd got appendices on all sorts of things. But I thought, what the hey, I like cooking and this is a great recipe. So I put in the recipe for the seafood gumbo. The book's now in its third printing or third edition. And to this day, it remains the only electronics book in the world that has a seafood gumbo recipe.
I love that. That is fantastic. Way to bring it all together, Max. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Max.
Oh, it's my very, very great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So if you want to check out pictures of the creations Max mentioned in this week's episode, or check out his website, be sure to take a look at this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. Are you a maker? Tell me your story. I'm looking for guests for this show. If you'd like to join me on a future episode of Makers Today, please send me an email at Amelia, that's A-M-E-L-I-A, at eejournal.com. Or you can always reach me on LinkedIn as well. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. And 5 stars, please. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or heck you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For August 24th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.